very short radio pieces about Rick Burns' television series about the history of New York. One.
So 6 years.
Seven.
7 years. How do you spend 7 years on one project?
You know, I maybe frighteningly feel I could spend another seven easily on this one.
Two.
The most surprising revelation for me about the history of New York was to discover that the Empire State Building, though other buildings are taller than it, will always be the tallest building in the world. That's an amazing achievement. It doesn't matter that others have surpassed it. It laid claim at a crucial moment to being the tallest building, and you can't convince any New Yorker that it's not the tallest building in the world.
Three.
When we get to the end of the last episode, I'm determined that people will remember the Dutch and not have forgotten that this sprawling city that covers 327 square miles and 400 years of quite dazzling history began as a remote, purely commercial outpost on the banks of the Hudson. No religious proposition about it, no Quaker Philadelphia here, no Puritan Boston. And that lack of any kind of religious requirement, nobody had to believe any one thing or another in old New Amsterdam, meant that from the very beginning it was uniquely open to people.
Four. Five.
March 1911, March 25th, 15 minutes before the workday ended, someone dropped a match or a burning cigarette into a pile of discarded remnants, scraps of cloth at the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory, and the doors had been locked to keep out union organizers. Many of the other escape ways of escape were blocked by sewing machines, and the blaze spread with frightening rapidity. The mainly women employees on the 8th and 9th floor simply couldn't get out. There was no way to go, and it became apparent rapidly that as the blaze spread, that the only way out was going to be by jumping. There were crowds gathering below. People had come up from the Lower East Side. Relatives had come up from the Lower East Side. The most modern fire department in the nation, the New York Fire Department, had arrived. Its equipment was too short to get up to the 8th and 9th floors. And people watched with a kind of helplessness and in total horror as women, many of them already on fire, leapt to their death. In the event, 144 women died. And it was like the dam broke. The sense of difference and division that separated people was for a moment just annulled. And people somehow felt, we can't live in a community that allows this to happen. And one of the most amazing political movements, really, of American history, emerged phoenix-like from that catastrophe. And in 1912, a raft of legislation, 56 out of 60 pieces of legislation were passed that absolutely revolutionized life in the workplace.
Six. Seven.
The Brooklyn Bridge. Life might not be worth living without the Brooklyn Bridge. You know, it's like somebody once said, it's like Beethoven's Fifth. You didn't know you needed it until it was there, and then you can't imagine what life would be like without it.
Eight.
In ways that were giddy and marvelous and often dangerous, but above all, spectacularly creative. All the forces in New York that had been sort of coming out of the ground maybe for two or three centuries came to a mighty culmination in New York in the 1920s. There's an extraordinary photograph of a couple dancing seemingly on air with nothing but the marvelous, ludicrous spire of the Chrysler Building behind them. Is one of those images that really sort of haunt you because it expresses so much about the glamour of New York, the romance of the city, and the real romance of the city. I mean, not some kind of postcard romance, and a sort of an ascent skyward. And there's something almost tragic and mythic and Icarus-like about New York in the 1920s. You sort of know it's going to fly so high, it will finally try to touch the sun and burn its wings and fall to the ground.
Nine. So after studying New York's past and its history for so long, are you smarter about its present?
Ken Jackson, the great historian of New York, the dean of New York historians, you know, was fond of saying that in New York, until very recently, the attitude was history's for losers. We're here, we New Yorkers are here, we're about the present and the future. We're building new things and the hell with the past. And when the Rutgers ball hit Penn Station in 1963, kind of really remarkable thing began to happen. And for the first time, New Yorkers began to question in great numbers a kind of a characteristic New York thing. Let's just throw it away and build something bigger and newer in its place. And, you know, as we sit here on the edge of the century, I think New York's at a peculiarly mature moment. For the first time in its history, we actually, New Yorkers tend to have a complicated, ambiguous attitude towards change. Should we tear it down? Well, Grand Central Station, no, let's keep it. But something else may have to go, and there should be a reason, a principle for it. A new kind of New York is emerging, a much more adult New York, not sort of driven by adolescent growth hormones, and absolutely still a city which is a leader city in the vanguard.
10.
New Yorkers walk more than any other city dwellers, even though they have taxis and subways and buses. It really belongs to the feet. And
well, since it's a city of the feet, I'll walk you wherever you're going. Where are you going?
I guess I'm going to go to this. Best subway to get me home. What do you think?
You've been listening to 10 very short radio pieces about Rick Burns' quite long television series about New York. New York, a documentary film, premieres this Sunday night on PBS. Initially, it is in 5 parts and will run for 5 nights, 2 hours per night starting Sunday, with a 6th 2-hour program scheduled for broadcast in the spring of 2000. For WNYC, I'm Sarah Fishko.